Good evening. This is Glenn Ford. Everything in your life and everything in mine changed about a year ago when the first atomic bomb fell. These changes have to do not only with war, but also with peace. Right now, we are facing the great decision of what to do about the control of atomic energy. A more abundant world than we've ever known lies ahead for us if man is wise enough to banish the threat of the atom and put atomic energy to work for him. The world ahead is ours for the making.
Four horsemen rode across the land, and their names were
War,
Pestilence,
Famine,
Death. And to these now is added a fifth horseman, the threat of the atom.
The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Fifth Horseman, written and produced by Arnold Marquis. Here is the plain truth about the awesome danger and the great promise of atomic energy and the choice which faces mankind. Starring Glenn Ford, this is the third in the series titled Promise.
The droning, a sort of high-frequency hum. I stirred in my sleep, tried to figure out what it was. It was like a strange presence needling my consciousness. Slowly, I opened my eyes. 70 or 80 men and women were sitting around in what seemed to be a long aluminum and plastics living room. A dozen or more were dancing to the music that seemed to come from nowhere. I discovered I was seated in a deep sofa. There was a woman beside me. Suddenly, she turned toward the window and inadvertently touched me.
Oh.
She drew away from me.
Oh, I didn't see you. I didn't know. I wasn't aware that anybody was here.
I just looked at her.
I hadn't seen you aboard.
Aboard?
You get to know most of the passengers.
I looked out of the window. Sky. When I looked back, she was looking me over out of the corner of her eye.
Where is your destination?
I don't know.
Oh.
She smiled to cover her bewilderment. I tried to piece together the meaning of what she had said. I must have stared at her in my confusion. When my attention switched back to her, she was studying me only as a woman can do when she speaks of
her things. How long were you in Central Asia?
I've never been to Central Asia. She looked at me. All at once, I realized how different I looked from all the other men there.
Will you excuse me, please?
She got up, crossed the room, and disappeared through the door at the far end. I looked out of the window. I saw the horizon, the sky, and the sea far, far under us. I was flying in the stratosphere over the ocean. How did I get there? Where had I come from? Where was I going? The questions tumbled over each other and was lost in the swirling vortex of my mind. I'm in a plane, that's sure. Must be a giant. And something tells me that there's another deck below this. Sleeping quarters, probably. This plane must carry 400 passengers. Oh, no. No, there isn't a plane that big on Earth. How did I get here? Let's see now. There's the sun. We must be traveling eastward. What did that woman say? Central Asia? Then that must be the Pacific down there. An official came in and came directly to me.
If
you don't mind, sir, would you let me have your name?
I told him. He thumbed through some papers.
Your name doesn't seem to be on the passenger list, sir.
I didn't know what to say.
You must have boarded in Central Asia.
I've never been in Central Asia.
This is a non-stop flight from Central Asia to Samoa.
Is it?
Would you mind coming with me, sir?
They asked me all the usual questions.
You must have some means of identification.
Yes, I do. I took out my billfold. Here's my driver's license.
Yeah, thank you.
I just got it last week.
Strange-looking thing. Why, this was issued July 10th, 1946.
That's what I say.
This is 2050.
What?
This is the year 2050. That license was issued 104 years ago.
The thought stunned me. What had happened to my family, my home, my friends? And how did I get here? 2050? Oh, no. No, that was incredible.
In about 2 hours, we'll be in Samota.
Samota? What is... Well, where is Samota? The captain looked at the first officer.
That's a little like asking where is Adamville, the big atomic community in Alaska, or the desert city in North Africa.
Atomic communities?
Samota was the first, you know. That's the reason for the big centennial they're now preparing.
The 100th anniversary?
Yes, that's what they're getting ready to celebrate. The 100th anniversary of the founding of Samota.
Oh, uh-huh.
Most of our passengers from the atomic communities in Central Asia are en route to Samota for the celebration.
The people on this ship? All those men and women I saw in the living room, the club room?
Yes.
They live in Central Asia?
Yes.
They have everything in Central Asia that Samota has. A matter of fact, many of them originally came from Samota. They're coming back for a homecoming.
Where is Samota?
Where?
In North America.
The first officer looked at the captain.
Samota is an atomic community of some millions. The biggest atomic community in North America. Larger than the one in the Yukon.
The Yukon? You mean up in Alaska?
On the border of Alaska, yes. Up there in the northwest. Around the richest nickel ores in the world. They have big industrial plants there. But the climate of Samota is much more pleasant. And this is the reason for Samota's great popularity.
Uh-huh.
Just as people once flocked to California, they have for the past 80 years been flocking to Samota.
But where is Samota?
It seems a little strange to meet somebody who doesn't know. But the community of Samota is situated in what is still called by tradition the Great American Desert. Most of it is now fertile green land due to atomic power which made large-scale irrigation possible.
They took me to a comfortable library in the deck below. A dozen or so passengers were sitting there reading me. Looked at me quizzically. I looked out of the window at the horizon and the great expanse of the Pacific. I looked at the books on the shelves, read the titles. Atomic propulsion, nuclear fission and power, radiation therapy, the new tradition, to the moon in an atomic rocket ship. Oh? The age of space travel. There was not one about war. Not one title mentioned atomic bombs. I sat down and tried to think.
I hope you'll forgive my gaucheness.
The young woman I'd sat next to in the living room above was there in the library. Her name was Star.
I was so startled that I...
So was I.
When you said you'd never been to Central Asia.
Yes. Yes. Are you going to Samota?
That's my home. I'll be so glad to get back.
I've I've never been to Samota.
Where have you been?
Were you born in Samota?
Yes. So were my parents and my grandparents. But my great-grandparents were immigrants. They came from New York. They never did like the crowded city. And when Samota was first laid out in the desert, they were among the first ones to come out there and settle. You see, great-grandfather was one of the men who worked on that atomic bomb.
Your great-grandfather?
Yes. In a small way, he was a laboratory assistant in that place in New Mexico when they made the first bomb. That's why he had so much faith in Samota. Most people at that time, back about 1950, didn't realize what could be done with atomic energy. There's no place like it today. It's green and lush. I like it better than the atomic communities in Central Asia and Central Australia. You haven't been there, I suppose.
Hmm? No, I haven't.
Well, where are you from?
I'm from Racine, Wisconsin.
Oh, yes. I bet atomic energy changed that town, all the factories.
Yes. Now, about Samota, you said it was green and lush, eh?
It is. The big pumping stations are run by atomic power, so there's plenty of water.
Well, where does the water come from?
They pump it up from under the desert.
Oh.
The fruits and vegetables are wonderful. Of course, my brother always raves about the mangoes and coconuts he gets up in the Yukon. But I notice when he comes home weekends, he eats as much of our Samota fruits and vegetables as I do.
Mangoes and coconuts in the Yukon?
They grow everything up there. Those big hothouses. Oh, listen.
San Francisco. 9 cases of the same strange sickness that has been reported from New York have been discovered here in San Francisco. All medical facilities have been mobilized to prevent the outbreak from becoming an epidemic.
Will you excuse me, please?
Well, of course.
I'm going to my stateroom to talk to my folks in Samota.
Everyone left the library. I stood there uncertainly for a minute. Then I sat down and looked out of the window. There was the coastline. The speed we crossed that coastline gave me the first inkling of how fast we were traveling. We were over the mountains, and there was the desert. Samota. The biggest community I'd ever seen in my life. My heart pounded with excitement as we came down to a landing.
All passengers, this way, please, into the reception center. This way, please, into the reception center.
I hope you'll come and see us.
Oh, yes.
Maybe only any time. Here's my number.
She was gone. Guards were waiting to take me to the Office of Science Administration. The captain went along. I wondered about that sickness in New York and San Francisco. What kind of a disease is it, Captain?
No one seems to know.
The highways were freeways. 12 lanes wide and one-way traffic. The trees, the shrubbery, the grass, everything was green and lush. The air was clear.
That's because there's no soot or smoke here.
I was going to say...
All our power and heat here are created by atomic energy.
You don't use coal at all?
Oh, no. No coal and no fuel oil. And practically all our automobiles are run on light storage batteries charged from atomic power supply lines. In the rest of the country, there are still many old-fashioned gasoline buggies around, but we're about to pass an ordinance prohibiting them from entering Samota. You see that important-looking building over there?
Hmm? Oh, well, with the great park around it, eh?
Yes, that's our central atomic power station.
That?
It supplies all the power for Samota. 10 million kilowatts. It would never have been able to been possible to create an industrial community like Samota if we'd had to haul 1 million carloads of coal from thousands of miles away.
I tried to imagine the immensity of atomic energy, but my mind trailed out in vague bewilderment.
You see, 1 pound of uranium or plutonium gives the same amount of energy as 1,500 tons of coal.
I said yes, but I couldn't quite comprehend. We sped down the broad freeway into the heart of Samota. The gleaming, spacious houses, the plastic-paved streets, the broad, shady parkways. Everything told me that this was a different world, a different time. We drew up to a spacious hospital building. They examined me with strange medical equipment, then took me to the office of the head doctor.
You seem to be all right. But we have one concern about you.
You're afraid that I might have brought in that disease, eh?
Frankly, yes. It's moving inland from both coasts. And since we cannot seem to find out where you came from, it will be necessary to keep you under observation for a few days. If you don't mind.
They put me up in comfortable quarters with a solar patio, an excellent bath, swimming pool. For the next few days, I spent most of my time watching the television screens. I saw what was going on all over the world. Peace and plenty seemed to have settled everywhere. The new atomic cities in North Africa, Central Australia, Central Asia, Alaska, and Iceland, on previously barren Pacific islands, had become centers of a new civilization. There was a great feeling of community between the citizens of these atomic communities all over the world, and it helped to bring the nations of the world close together. And then I saw New York. That's what shocked me most. What had happened to New York? The scientists dropped in frequently to talk to me.
This industrial development of Samota and other atomic cities would not have been possible if fuel oil or coal had to be brought in, or electric power lines carried far overland.
Oh, then coal is no longer transported around the country?
Only on short hauls. Nowadays, coal is used for better purposes. To make gasoline and lubricating oils and plastics and medicines and thousands of other things we cannot make from uranium. Coal is too precious to burn.
A few days later, when they released me, I began to realize how the world had changed. How new abundance had brought new ease and freedom of living and goodwill among nations.
Yes, I'll come over and pick you up.
I talked to Star by radio from my quarters.
I'll be there in 15 minutes.
We drove through the community, and I felt like a child being taken uptown for the first time in his life. Everything looked bright and prosperous, designed for free and magnificent living. We drove out to one of the great bauxite mines, Lumos Snuffing Works.
You act as if you've never seen anything like this in your life.
They refine the bauxite right here when they mine it?
Well, of course.
It seemed incredible. I remember how they used to mine the bauxite in one continent and haul it across half the world to be refined into aluminum where there was cheap water power. They do this with all ores?
Of course. They even extract the uranium from the pitch blende ore and make plutonium right at the place it's mined, up at Great Bear Lake. And then they fly it in small amounts to all the places it's used, here and all the other places.
And all the power here in Samota comes from that uranium?
Yes, that and plutonium. You know something?
No, what?
I don't know whether to believe you or not.
I learned that the war and the water under Samota had been traced by radioactivity. They designated the site for the community right over a subterranean lake. The engineers had sunk the wells with atomic energy, and for 100 years now had been pumping the water with atomic energy. The water had irrigated the desert and made the community. The impact of it all bewildered me.
I think I'm becoming ill.
I looked at Star. She was white.
Oh, my head aches.
It suddenly occurred to me she was really the only person in this new world that I knew personally. The only one who had any interest in me. She stopped the car.
You drive. Get me to the clinic. Please.
She has the same thing that the others have.
The others?
We have 72 cases here, all developed in the last 12 hours.
Is it the same thing they have in New York and San Francisco?
Yes, and throughout the rest of the country. The epidemic moved inland from both coasts.
Well, what is it?
First, the medical authorities in New York thought that it was a recurrence of a virus epidemic that had raged 90 years ago. Now, we're not so sure.
The death toll from the epidemic is mounting. Thousands have died in New York, Washington, Cincinnati, Dallas, Chicago, Seattle, Los Angeles, and San Francisco.
I offered to help in the clinic. I worked from dawn to dark. More and more victims were brought in with high fever, cramps, and paralysis. Some of them died. I wondered about Star.
She's just the same as the others.
That's all I could find out. They were working with hundreds of different radioactive elements and compounds in the hospitals at Somota, all made radioactive by atomic energy. With these radioactive preparations, they'd traced down the causes and found cures for many diseases. And when the sheep on the ranges outside Somota had mysteriously died, they had traced the deaths with these isotopes to contamination in the grass, and then to a contaminated well many miles away.
I think we have isolated the virus that caused this disease.
The scientist held up a small vial with a tiny bit of what looked like glycerin in the bottom.
Now we're going to identify this virus and prepare an antibody for it. With the help of radioactive isotope analysis, we have developed an identification system for proteins, and virus is a kind of a protein, much as police experts identify fingerprints.
They sent the virus for identification to the Central Protein Identification Laboratory in Cambridge, in England. They submitted it to different tests in which radioactive tracers played an important role. We tried out various keys to see which ones fitted the locks. That's how he described it to me.
Now the virus is back from England with the identification card showing the pattern of its structure. Now we can order from the Central Antibody Laboratory at Rio the antibody to fit this particular virus.
Star was growing weaker and weaker. 3 days later, a plane brought the antivirus compound from Rio.
We have not yet found an animal which could be infected with this new virus. Dogs and guinea pigs and rabbits all did not respond to it. So we have no other way but to try it out directly on humans.
I don't want them to try it out on me.
No, Star. No, let them try it out on somebody stronger. Give yourself a chance.
I don't want them to try it out on me. Tell the doctor I'm ready.
They tried it on her.
She has a very high fever and delirium.
I watched by her side all that day and that night.
Hello.
Hello, Star.
I think she's past the crisis.
What they learned that day at Somota went out to medical centers all over North America and all the world. The great research centers in Europe, Asia, Africa, Australia, Greenland, Antarctica all knew about it within an hour. As new discoveries were made, they were immediately radioed to all the other research centers of the world. Soon reports of the results of the new treatment began coming in.
San Francisco, the epidemic is slackening off here. Fewer new cases have been reported in
New York, the death toll from the epidemic has dropped off perceptibly here, and indications are now...
Chicago, no new cases have developed here, and the death rate has returned almost to normal with a few cases.
By the end of the week, there was not one new case in Somota. I sat down and reflected at what had happened. An epidemic had endangered North America, and the science of the entire world had joined forces to overcome it. And now, Somota could go ahead with its centennial. For weeks, I'd been so busy, I hadn't thought of what had happened to my world, the world of 1946. And suddenly all this unreality became unbearable. It couldn't be true. It couldn't, all this. It couldn't.
Where are you going?
Star came in. I'm going to leave.
Where are you going?
Well, I don't know, but I'm going to get away.
Leave me?
Yes. She stood there and watched me as I walked to the door. Goodbye, Star.
Goodbye.
I went out into the moonlight, got into the car they'd let me use. I'd send the money back for it when I... What was I talking about? How could I send money back? I pulled away down the broad freeway out of Samota. I drove all that night, faster than I'd ever driven in my life. All the things that had happened since I wakened on that plane raced through my mind and kept time with the speeding motor. As dawn came, I began to get the feeling that I was in a familiar country. I seemed to remember having been on that road before. What it was, I didn't know. But I knew I'd come that way before. The road that turns the mountains in the distance. By the time the sun was up, I was wetting my lips and driving faster, 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 trying to get to someplace I knew. I slowed down for a big turn, and all of a sudden, there it was. Boulder Dam. Boulder Dam. That's what it was. I'd been there many times. There was the sign. What had happened to it? It was abandoned. It was filled with mud. It was falling into ruin. And then I remembered this mighty structure had generated only 1,000,000 kilowatts of power, only 1/10 of one amount of power that was generated in that little atomic powerhouse in Samota. And so it had become obsolete. It stood there like the forlorn vestige of a world long since gone. Then this really was the year 2050. I wondered what happened to the world of 1946. The nations must have gotten together somehow and prevented atomic energy from being used for war. But how did they do it? Then I remembered what I had seen. In the streets of Samota, there were several young Chinese, Spaniards, and Russians wearing gold badges with the letters ADA, and suddenly it struck me. That must mean Atomic Development Authority, the plan for international control that there was so much talk about back in 1946. It must have gone through. This was a new world. And the age of the atom. I knew then that I could never go back to the world of 1946. The only person I really knew in this world was Star. Oh, I got into the car and drove slowly back to Samota.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard Glenn Ford in the third program in NBC's new series, The Fifth Horseman, written and directed by Arnold Marquis. The plain truth about atomic energy and the hour of decision which faces mankind. Next week at this same time, over most of these stations, the National Broadcasting Company will present the fourth program in this series titled Crisis, a story of the 11th hour in man's fight for survival. Glenn Ford appeared tonight through the courtesy of Columbia Pictures, and is currently to be seen opposite Rita Hayworth in Gilda, and will be starred in the forthcoming picture Gallant Journey. The original music for tonight's program was composed and conducted by Thomas Peluso. The Fifth Horseman came to you from Hollywood. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.